Hello and welcome to Cruisin' for a Reviewsin', the podcast where I get a friend to watch a Tom Cruise movie they've never seen before and then review it with me. I'm your host, Cara Westworth, and today I'm joined by Scott.
Hello, I'm Scott Wampler.
Thank you for joining me from the other side of the world. We're literally on the other side of the world in terms of physically and time zones. It's first thing in the morning for you and it's nearly 1 a.m. for me, so that's fun.
Yeah, scheduling this episode was a journey that we went on together, I think, and continued right up till the minute we started talking. Slept through an alarm. Wait, did I didn't. It doesn't matter.
No,
it
doesn't matter. Yeah. All I know is that no matter how much I tried, even with the help of an app, I still could not wrap my mind around how time zones work.
Oh, I don't get them. I certainly don't.
Why? If you were 24 hours behind, it would be fine, but no.
Well, that would be an even number, wouldn't it? That would be like,
Or even 12 hours, but no.
Yeah. No, here in America, we are unfortunately very self-centered. And so time zones are like a thing, like, oh, why would I bother learning time zones when this is the center of the universe? Yeah, we're really bad about that and everything else, but you know.
Okay, so we are reviewing a film today. As I did in my last episode with Maria, we're cheating a little bit. We're doing a movie that you have seen before, but I think you said it's been a long time since you've seen it.
Yeah, it had been a while. I think I glanced at a list of the titles you had done recently, and the ones I really would have wanted to do were somewhat recent. So I was like, okay, well, let's pick one that I haven't seen in a while. And I knew I liked The Firm, so... Oh, I just casually revealed the title. I hope you weren't building up to it.
No, we weren't. Yeah, we're doing The Firm, everyone. It is a 1993 film directed by Sidney Pollack. It is one that I'm surprised I hadn't done already. Either everyone had seen it or it just didn't seem to suit the people, like my friends who were offering to do an episode with me. But it worked out well for me, so I get to do it with you. So,
What do you mean it didn't suit the people that might have done it?
Well, we'd always think of another, like they'd say, oh, I haven't seen this, and this. I'm like, oh, there's a bit of a connection between you and this other film.
Oh, like, okay, I see.
Sometimes if I could, I would try and find like something that kind of linked them to that movie in some tiny way. And
sure.
I had one friend who expressed interest, but we never got around to it, who just works in an office and everything. I'm like, you're an office worker. Maybe we can do The Firm. And that it never happened. But yeah, that's kind of what the vibe I went for.
You've used a computer before, right? Just like Mitch McDeer. You're real. Let me say, you're very smart doing it this way, where you're sort of kind of eyeballing a connection between the guest and the topic, but ultimately letting them pick. We do the same thing on, I have a show called The King Cast. It's a Stephen King thing, and we have guests on to talk about various Stephen King adaptations and unadapted King work, and we always, always, always let the guest pick the title. If you assign homework to someone, you just don't get as good of results, I don't think.
No, definitely not. And if they've already got like a little connection to it, I mean, that's been my only flaw, is making it movies people haven't seen before.
Yeah, that's tough with Cruise, dude.
Yeah. It's either a case I found that people have either seen all Tom Cruise movies or they've seen almost none. Like there's actually not a lot of
middle ground.
People who've seen like a bunch. Yeah. It's either people totally dig Tom Cruise and want to see all these movies, or just because they're all really popular movies, they end up going to see them, or they hate Tom Cruise or they're just not into movies. And yeah.
Can I ask you, do you know, have you noticed like a thread between all your guests of the Cruise movie people have seen the least? Like, is there a title that keeps coming up?
No one had seen American Made.
I don't think anyone did here either.
Well, no one knew it existed. Actually, Night and Day is another one, which is wild because I love that movie now that I've seen it. But I vaguely remember hearing about it when it came out. And I don't know, nothing. It obviously didn't do that well here or didn't show very much. But American Made, I do not remember at all.
You know, as we're talking about this, I don't know if I've actually seen it. Doug Liman directed that one, right?
Yes.
Huh. If I've seen it, I've completely forgotten it. Night and Day, I sort of remember. I saw that one once, I think. But I remember it being fun.
Well, I'm a very big fan of Ethan Hunt and Mission Impossible movies. Oh, so
yes, of course.
Seeing like a more fun, lighthearted, sexy Ethan Hunt, I was like, oh, okay. This is,
right.
This is wonderful.
He has great chemistry with Diaz.
Oh, amazing. So good.
You know, and you're right about that. I love Mission Impossible movies so much. I think it's the most consistently, well, it's just the most consistent franchise right now in Hollywood, I think. You know, I think a lot of people would point you toward Fast and the Furious, but I still think of those movies as just like soap operas with cars crashing in them all the time, you know?
I have never been able to get past that the first one just felt like Point Break, but with cars. I have never been able to get past that. So I've only seen a handful of those movies and...
I'll make a suggestion for you. And I'm really not pushing this franchise on you in general, because I didn't see any of them up until the fifth one. And on the fifth one, I was dating somebody who was into Fast and the Furious. She kind of dragged me along to see it, if I remember correctly. And I loved it. I had no idea who anyone was, but it was so over the top and ridiculous that it was sort of like it pummeled you into submission. You had to be having a good time by the end of it. And then I watched the ones after that. I've never gone back and seen the other ones. And I don't think the series has ever gotten better than five. So if you just want to watch one of them to get a somewhat representative look at the series, check out Fast Five. That one's fun.
I will. And honestly, I love trash action movies, so I know I'd enjoy them all, to be honest. It's such a big commitment now that because I didn't watch them as they came out, and the thought of sitting through 10 or more. Right. Although I saw Hobbs and Shaw, so...
Oh, no. You know. I don't think I saw that one. I think I was planning to see it, and then I had friends that saw it, and they were like, don't.
Look, I love The Rock, I love Jason Statham, and I love big, bawdy, silly action movies, so...
Right.
It satisfied a lot of that, yeah. Although the trailer ruined it. The trailer, like every movie I went to see leading up to that movie, the trailer gave everything away, and it drove me mad, but it was still really fun.
Yeah. They're really bad about that with trailers these days.
Okay, The Firm.
The Firm.
So this is based on, I have just forgotten his name, a Grisham novel, right?
Yes.
Yes. Oh, I thought this was going to be my most researched episode yet, but maybe not. Yeah, so I haven't read the book. I haven't actually read any Grisham books. Mm-hmm. Not really my bag.
Right.
It seems like this one was pretty well, like quite similar to the book, except for a little bit of a change in the end. And one of the plot points is a bit different, but otherwise seemed the same. And I definitely don't need to read the book then if it's that similar.
I don't think I've read any Grisham either. Obviously a very popular novelist, but you know, when this one movie was made and Grisham was sort of at the height of his powers in, you know, the literary world, I was too young to give a shit. And also I was like a monster kid. I wanted to read horror stuff. I didn't want to read about lawyers.
Yeah, I was too busy reading every single Christopher Pike book that I ever read.
Yeah,
got
for real, right?
Than to like sit around reading old people books.
Take me to Fear Street, buddy. Like, I don't need to know about whatever's going on in Memphis with these, like, crusty old dudes pushing paper in an
lawyers.
Office. Yeah, a wood-paneled office. I don't give a fuck.
No interest in reading his books, but I don't mind some of his movies, like some of the movies that have been adapted into. For some reason, I thought A Few Good Men was a Grisham novel and then quickly remembered that it's not.
Well, it's got a legal case in it. So
it's law, so.
Yeah. They're doing lawyer stuff in it. Gotta be Grisham.
Political intrigue. Wow, must be. But I think these two came out one after the other, which is kind of funny because I don't think Tom Cruise has done another law movie since. Just did two in a row and was done.
The closest thing I think would be he played a senator in Lions for Lambs.
Oh, that's a movie no one's seen and one should see.
Yeah. I remember nothing about that one. I saw
it
when
it came
out. It's
so dry and boring and
yeah. I remember it having a really great cast. But that's about it.
Oh, wonderful cast. Just I'm like, this is so boring. And it's just Robert Redford kind of being like, look how woke I am. And no thanks.
That's what we want from Robert Redford, sure.
Definitely why I go to the movies. The Firm, I'll go through the actors. And this is a pretty decent cast too. So the main character is obviously played by Tom Cruise. His name is Mitch McDear. He is married to a character called Abby, who's played by Jean Triplehorn, who I only really know her as the female lead in Waterworld.
Yes.
Actually, when I was going through the list, I was like, I actually don't know her from much else. Gene Hackman is Avery Toller. An interesting fact I saw about this movie is there was like this weird contract thing where he was meant to have his name before the title, but Tom Cruise's contract said only his name could be. So Gene Hackman was like, fine, just don't put my name on the poster. So no one knew he was in the movie until they watched the movie.
It's a big flex.
Gene Hackman's famously an arsehole, isn't he?
I think so. I think that's the perception. He's sort of a national treasure, you know, but I understand he is very grumpy. So, you know,
I think if I was Gene Hackman, I would be very grumpy too. So
yeah, you're Gene Hackman. You can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
Be grumpy. You earned it, buddy.
We have other characters. If I start reading them out, it's going to be a little bit boring. But Ed Harris is in this as an FBI agent, Wayne Terrence. Holly Hunter is in it quite briefly, but she actually still got nominated to be Best Supporting Actress that year. She plays Tammy. Gary Busey's briefly in it as Eddie Lomax. Yeah, who else is in there? We got Wilford Brimley, who is the security guard William, who I only really think of as being from Cocoon.
Yeah.
And oh, he's the diabetes guy too, isn't he?
Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
Yeah. So this is a very different character to kind of, if they're the only two things you know him from, that's, yeah, very different. He's quite a jerk, probably one of the big villains in this movie.
Speaking of,
yeah,
you know who else is in here is Jigsaw, Tobin Bell.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's playing.
Oh, he's a creepy looking man.
Fuck yeah, he is. What's going on there?
Oh, just awful. And then...
And with the long hair, it's particularly unsettling, his whole presence.
Mm, and he starts running and I'm like, oh no, stop. he's
Jigsaw awful. Doesn't run. What is this?
The other hitman who was alongside him is, I forgot his name, Isaac Schrader. Fuck, I forgot his name. Sex Gifts guy. What's his name?
Dean Norris from Breaking Bad.
That's it?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, lots of fun little people popping up through. Yeah, but Tom Cruise is Mitch, who we follow. Mitch has just graduated from Harvard, like top of the class, and he's getting all these job offers to join different firms. I think they're in Chicago, right?
They're in Memphis, but they're...
Before they moved to Memphis, I think
they're in Boston.
They are in Boston?
Yes. Chicago is where the mob guys are that...
Oh, yep. I knew there was a Chicago connection. So he's working as a waiter, you know, just doing what college students do to get by. He manages to secure a very good offer from a firm in Memphis, which his wife, Abby, is reluctant about, which, I mean, if you lived in Boston, I don't think you'd want to move to Memphis for a job, but I also haven't been to Memphis, so I don't know. He doesn't take it straight away. They actually go and visit so they can sort of suss it out. And immediately 10,000 red flags. She is kind of told, like, you know, it's not forbidden for you to work. You know, you're allowed to work. She's like, what the hell?
Right.
And, you know, you should definitely have children, you know, stability and all that sort of stuff. But nonetheless, he decides to take the job. I guess $96,000 when you're just out of college is probably like a really big amount of money. I couldn't even fathom earning that now, let alone in 1993 dollars.
Yeah, it's it would be a sizable starting salary. Even still. Yeah. And in 92, I guess absolutely. That would have been big money.
Mm.
And especially if all your shit is getting paid for, dude, because they're paying for the house. They're paying for his car. They're paying for, you know, they even furnish the house, you know, when he comes in.
And they end up paying off his student loans, which is probably quite a lot of money.
They're doing everything they can to make this dude happy.
Yeah, so he does end up taking it. When they offer it to him, they did a sneaky thing where they're like, if you were any good, you wouldn't even have to look at it. You could work it out. And they actually kind of make him work out how much he was offered by doing like lawyer stuff to kind of nut out whether or not how much money it was.
That's like one of my favorite moments in the movie, because there's a reason for him to do that in the moment, you know, so it makes sense. But mostly it's there to show you how effective he is as a lawyer, like on the floor. And
like maybe some little bit of foreshadowing into how manipulative they are.
Yeah, perhaps. Every time I see this, and granted it's not that often, I always get a kick out of like that scene where once he gets up out of his chair and you're like, oh shit, he's going to do lawyering. And sure enough, he does the lawyering.
You mentioned Tom Cruise in Another Life could have been a really good lawyer too. He's like, when he gets into that mode, incredible.
You would believe Tom Cruise if he told you something, for sure. Well, I used to cover the film industry. That was my job until COVID happened and then wiped out our website. For some years, I was going every year to Las Vegas to a convention called CinemaCon, which is like a huge convention for theater owners all over the world and particularly the United States. And it's held at Caesar's Palace in Vegas. And they
Hell yeah, that rules.
Oh, it was fucking rad, dude. Every studio would have, you know, a multi-hour presentation. So it would be like, well, today we got Warner Brothers, Paramount, and Sony. And then the next day it's like Disney and so on and so forth, right? And the studios would trot out these major fucking stars to basically present trailers and whatnot for whatever movie they had coming. So it's like a promise to these theater owners, like, here's what you're going to get this year, and you're going to make so much money, you know, like that sort of thing. And one of the years I was there, like, Tom Cruise came out and presented footage from one of the Mission Impossibles. And I'm sitting in the press section in the Colosseum in Caesar's Palace. So we're a pretty healthy distance from the stage. But even from that distance, when Tom Cruise like entered the room, that guy has, I'm not sure I've ever seen it with another human being, but a very strange like aura about him where he walks into a room and your eyes do not leave him. He is, seems to be radiating some sort of power that, I know that sounds crazy, but it's true. And that night they had a dinner for him, like in his honor, and fucking James Corden hosted it. And we ate at a table, like,
of course he did.
it was exactly what you thought it would be. And we ate at a table, like two tables over from Cruise. It was the same thing. Just knowing he was in the room, there was this like weird magnetic presence, and you kept like stealing glances at him, even though, you know, he's just over there eating a bad steak. You know, he's not doing anything interesting. So my point being that if Tom Cruise was a lawyer, yeah, I think he would slay every jury you put him in front of, because you just like, he's so magnetic and charismatic and all those other words.
I think he's one of like a handful of actors who actually have that proper star power. No matter, like, even if you hated him, if he walked past you or whatever, you would be starstruck. Like, you would have no choice.
Absolutely would. I've seen it with my own eyes. It's fucking,
I'm so jealous.
It's weird as shit. People, like, I've told people that story and they look me in the face and be like, they think I'm exaggerating, but I'm telling you, if you're ever in a room with Tom Cruise, you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. He's like, it's like an alien thing almost. It's so strange.
One could argue it is an alien thing, but it's something to do with Scientology, yeah, making him super powerful. He's
channeling Xenu is what's going on. Yes.
Well, it just depends. We have to do an experiment to see if he was like that in the 80s or if it's the power of Scientology that got him where he is now.
Yes.
But he ends up taking the job. So like, even after they go to Memphis, suss it all out, his wife is quite sus on everything. He still decides to take the job. I guess the money is too good to be true. There's a really nice little moment when they're walking down, I can't think of the name, main street of Memphis, but there's a kid who's busking who does flips for people to pay him. And yeah, for some reason, Mitch decides to start doing flips too, which is, I think Tom Cruise, if he was allowed to, would have tried to do it, but I don't think it was him. The way they cut it made it look
no,
like.
No, that's definitely not
it
Cruise.
It probably wasn't him. Yeah, but I'm sure he would have given it a good try if he could have.
It's just in there to establish that this guy, even though he's a lawyer, has the physical power to pull off some of the stuff that
he does later. Yeah.
McDear does later in the movie. Yeah. Not very subtle. Not subtle, that scene.
No. So they end up moving there. So we get told at some point that Abby obviously grew up really wealthy and that she kind of gave it up to be with Mitch, who grew up poor and maybe in a trailer park, the way they mentioned something, and his brother is in prison, which he doesn't tell any of this to the firm, which I don't think I even said their name. Shit, what is it?
Bendini, Lambert, and Locke.
That's it. Bendini, Lambert, and Locke, which is kind of fair enough. Like, later on they kind of ask, why didn't he tell us? I'm like, why would you say, like, I don't think it's any of their business, but also maybe it is if someone's in prison. I don't know.
It could reflect poorly, but really, like, I don't know that legally you have to disclose that.
So there's that little bit of an imbalance there. Like, he's so keen to do this because he's like, this is amazing money, when she's like, well, money's not everything kind of situation. So that kind of comes up a few times. We find out pretty quickly that everything they do is being kind of watched. It's just like a little scene where we first meet the security guard, William, who, Wilford Brimley, he kind of says, oh, the only calls that they made from the hotel were like to her mom and to the school board in Memphis, like everything's above board. So yeah, we're kind of being told, yeah, they're watching them straight off the bat to see what they're like, which comes back to haunt them catastrophically later in the movie. Oh, there's a bit more foreshadowing as well. They keep talking about Kaczynski and Hodges, and we need to do something about them, which happens pretty quickly. At one point they go back, Mitch and Abby go to, I don't know, have lunch or something with, what's his name, Lamar and his wife. So Lamar's one of the other junior, like lower down lawyers. Mm-hmm. And when they get there, they're distraught. And it's because these two guys that we just mentioned have died in a really horrible accident. A boat exploded and they died. And Abby's first sort of feeling that she gets is like, oh, she wasn't sad. She was scared. Like, she wasn't crying because she was sad about it. She was kind of scared. And so Abby's alarm bells are ringing.
Lamar is sitting out on the back patio, you know, like just staring into the distance when Cruz comes out there, and the sprinkler is just going back and forth across his leg and he's not moving. Mm. To me is like one of the more indelible images in this movie. I think about that moment a lot, just randomly.
I think the first time I saw this movie, I was like, oh, well, he's really beat up about this. But knowing that it's because everyone's aware of all the dodgy shit's happening in the firm, spoiler.
Right.
But he's not doing that because he's distraught. He's doing that because he's like,
oh, scared shitless.
Really heavy. Yeah. And because he also said, instead of like talking about what's happened when Mitch goes out, he's just like, oh yeah, bring your paperwork in. You shouldn't have to pay off your student loan. They'll pay it for you. Like, he just kind of switches to like this default work mode, even though he's, you know, catatonic with shock. And
yeah, company man through and through.
First day for Mitch, when he goes to work for the first time, he is absolutely stoked to be there. He gets there at like 6:30 in the morning and there's no one in the office except we see Kaczynski's office. So this is just before Kaczynski gets killed, I guess, where the security is in there and they just close the door mysteriously. Straight off the bat, though, apart from that weird little interaction, he's thrust straight into it. Everyone keeps piling stuff on his desk. I don't understand anything about law, so I don't know. They were just binders and binders, and they kept telling him about no one's ever failed the bar exam, don't forget. He gets to meet his, I guess, what would you call him? Like, Avery Toller would be his mentor?
Yeah, he's like his mentor in the firm. I don't know that it's outright stated, but it's heavily implied that new folks are taken under the wing of sort of an elder statesman from the firm, and Avery's his.
So that's Gene Hackman's character. So they takes him out for lunch, and immediately the first thing he goes into is how always be billing clients. Like, if you're even thinking about a client, make sure you're billing them, which sets up the entire plot of the movie, because that's what the whole plot's about, basically. Mm-hmm. They, you know, talk about things like how neither of them are idealists about being lawyers. They did it for like really practical kind of reasons. Like, Mitch, what was Mitch's thing? He saw the pizza place he worked at go out of business because he didn't pay taxes. And he's like, that sucks. Okay, I'm going to be a lawyer so I can make sure that doesn't happen to other people. But not in any kind of lofty reason, just like, oh, that's shit. I'm going to become a lawyer kind of thing.
It'll be easy.
I don't know. Do many people become lawyers for like really idealistic, like, I'm going to change the world reasons?
I would assume so, right? You know,
I assume they don't last very long.
I mean, it's, well, that's the thing. The legal system is so fucked, but I think that there must be some, idealistically, you must assume if you're interested in getting into that world that you might have the power to change it, perhaps from within.
I guess if you're in like human rights laws or, you know.
Sure.
I'm sure if you're getting into marine law, it's not because you want to save the world necessarily.
Like, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm jumping around a bit over the place, but those guys die. It's a little bit sus. And then we go to their funeral. There's this really kind of strange interaction between Abby and Avery. Mm. Avery is quite flirty with her, which is really strange at a funeral with her husband nearby.
Yes.
Sets off straight away that he's quite interested in Abby. And, you know, she points out to him like, oh, you knew them well, aren't you? Yeah, you must be racked with grief. And he's like, we all grieve differently. Like, okay.
By hitting on our colleagues' wives?
That's a kind of grief, I guess. A horny kind of grief.
Oh, the 90s. They hadn't taken sexual harassment training seminars yet, apparently.
Oh, absolutely not. Well, like when they talk earlier, where they're talking about there's like no one in the firm is divorced, no bachelors, and like, are there any women? And like, oh, there was one once, but you know, affirmative action on 4-inch heels kind of thing. And she's another lawyer who happened to die in the last 10 years. So that's another.
Not suspicious. Not suspicious.
No. A lot of deaths in this firm. Oh, well, keep going. Yeah, it's kind of just goes through him settling in. He is at the firm just all the time, which I imagine is probably what it's like. If you're going to move into some big fancy firm for a lot of money, you're probably going to be worked to death for the first year or so. So Abby doesn't really cope with it that well. She gets pretty upset about it. Like I said before, it's because she doesn't think the money is worth not ever seeing her husband kind of thing, where he's like, well, I'm making all this money and I want to spoil you. So it is worth it. So like a little tiny bit of conflict starts arising there. They end up going to, so for some reason, I guess, I don't know if this is something I missed. They go to the Cayman Islands a lot. I know there's this one client called Sunny who's there, but they can't possibly be seeing him every time. So is the Cayman Islands one of the places where you have offshore accounts?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so they're hiding money there. And this guy happens to be there. And also it happens to be the place where boats are exploding and killing
boats
lawyers.
Boats just explode out of the yeah. Avery loves diving. So they make a really big point, which will come back into play later, about how you're not allowed to fly and dive in the same 24-hour period. Mm-hmm. So when he takes Mitch to the Caymans, like the first thing they have to do, even though they've got a full schedule, is they have to go diving. Otherwise, they cannot because they make sure there's at least 24 hours before they fly again. I looked it up. Apparently, that is mostly true. So it's a fun fact.
How do you think they figured out that shit? Like, how many people had to get, like, violently ill underwater before they pieced it together? Oh, it's because he was on an airplane yesterday. Of course.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel really awful for the people who figured that out. And it wouldn't have been, it kind of been that long ago, like scuba diving and airplanes.
Right.
Like, haven't been, yeah, like just a whole bunch of people got the bends in the air or like, I don't know, just blew up like the balloons in the water. I don't know.
Yeah, and what does it do to you? I want to know about that.
So yeah, they go to the Cayman Islands. Mitch is kind of stressed. So he's already kind of feeling a little bit sus about stuff. So a little bit earlier on one of his nights where he's working really, really late, he's working at a diner. And I don't know why he's working at a diner. If he could work at a diner, why didn't he just go home? He's doing some work, having a coffee, and these two guys come in, start talking to him, and immediately they know a lot about him and they're FBI agents and they're kind of just like, oh yeah, you work for them. I hear this and this. Anyway, catch you later. So a couple of things they said to him have kind of piqued his interest. So when he goes to the Cayman Islands, he's a little bit sus. He's done a tiny bit of research on some of the people who've died from the firm and nothing really came up, but he did see a little tiny bit of snippet of information about the recent boat explosion. When they go to the Cayman Islands, he actually has like looks into it a little bit. And like basically what he finds out is the boat that exploded, it was chartered by these two guys and two other random guys, but the other two guys, their bodies were never found. And he describes a very stocky kind of wrestler looking man and then a man with long white hair and bright blue eyes, who we described before, basically the hitman for the firm. Mm-hmm. And Mitch is like, oh shit, this is getting really twisted now. While Avery's getting ready before they go to dinner one night, he very brazenly gets a key and unlocks this cupboard and spies through all these files. And a lot of these boxes of files have like the names of the dead lawyers on them. And like he knocks over his beer and just kind of leaves it in the cupboard.
Yeah, I have questions as well, about that.
Is Avery just never going to look in? I guess maybe they don't look in there very often, but it was pouring out the door.
Right. Like, and the fucking, there's like a chunk of the bottle still in there. I'm thinking, well, that's a wrap for you the next time someone opens. There's no opening that door and not noticing a puddle of sticky beer and a half a glass bottle sitting there.
Maybe they're just like, oh, that Avery, always just smashing bottles and leaving them around.
Yeah, maybe.
Hopefully for Mitch anyway. And maybe everything progresses so quickly in this movie that no one ever gets sus in that because,
yeah,
you know, no one gets a chance to go into that bloody cupboard again. So they go, they're on the Cayman. So oh yeah, after all that, they go to the hotel bar, I guess. There's lots of horny, flirty women who, you know, trying to get into their pants. And Mitch kind of brushes one off, but he goes for a walk on the beach and is seduced by another one who she, you know, she's having a bit of a like physical altercation with a man. It's implied that she might be a sex worker. She says all the right things to kind of hit the right buttons for Mitch and they end up having sex on the beach. Apparently really full on sex too from what they say later on. because it's like, you know, he's talking about the word saying oral and stuff. And I'm like, oh, on the beach?
No shit.
It's basically a setup to make sure that Mitch stays faithful to the firm. And so they set it all up and, yeah, took photos of it all happening so they could use it against him if anything happened, which they do.
Almost immediately.
Yeah, yeah, immediately. When they get back from the Cayman Islands, before they leave the Cayman Islands, they meet with old mate Sonny, who heavily insinuated that he has something to do with the mob because he keeps saying the people I know in Chicago. And when Mitch questions Avery about it, he's like, don't even worry about it. He likes to talk big. It's all very sus. And Mitch is starting to see all the red flags that he missed earlier.
Mm-hmm. I'm very curious to see you talk your way through the back half of this movie where it gets so goddamn busy. There's like, there's scenes in this movie where there's like a scene of a plane landing, and then right on top of that, another plane landing in a different location, and a train pulling into a station somewhere. It's so convoluted. So good luck, buddy.
When I first watched it, I'm like, oh, the second half of the movie is just running. And then watching it again a couple of times, I'm like, no, a lot more happens than running. I missed a lot. I just was like, wow, look at Tom Cruise running so much. I didn't expect so much running in The Firm. No, a lot happens, yeah. So after they get back from the Cayman Islands, Avery's like, all right, go home early and go see your wife, whatever. Instead, Mitch decides to go actually visit his brother, who conveniently is in a prison like just across the way from Memphis.
More or less.
So he gets to meet him and he actually immediately like tells him like, you're in jail, but yet I'm the one surrounded by all the criminals. He talks to him about it, and his brother Ray, who's in there for manslaughter, he's obviously having a really bad time in prison, is like really, really keen to get out on parole as soon as possible. He says, look, I think you need to look into this. I know someone that you should go see. His name is Eddie Lomax. Go talk to him and see if he can help you, which Mitch immediately does, like just doesn't go home, just goes straight to Eddie Lomax. And that is Gary Busey's character, apparently there was someone else who was cast initially as this character, but I don't think anyone else could do it like Gary Busey.
Nope. A universal truth. No one can do it like Busey.
Oh my goodness. So yeah, he meets with him and like straight off the bat is like, oh yeah, I was cellmates with your brother. Did he tell you it was statutory rape? And just like, that's his introduction to this man who's supposed to better help him with this terrible situation that he's found himself in. But we also get to meet the character of Tammy, played by Holly Hunter, who is possibly one of the most wonderful characters I've ever seen in a film.
Oh yeah, she's great in this.
Yeah, she's only on the screen for like five and a half minutes, and she got nominated for a Best Supporting Actress Oscar. The thing I noticed, because I am a nail tech, is that she has the longest, most beautiful like pink nails throughout the movie, which you don't see in movies very much, because having long nails is like, you know, for continuity and stuff is a bit of a pain. But they also explain that away because she has different nails and a different wig on all the time. So yeah, she's always changing her appearance.
Master of disguise. Yeah, she's, yes.
Oh, she's wonderful. I don't even know how you'd describe her. Like,
well, she's a real character. You know, her very first moment on screen is she's telling a story about like what happens if you load the printer improperly or something. And she's kind of dancing around in the office. Like, she's very effervescent and bubbly in like a very subtly Southern sleazy way. It's hard to, I know what you mean. It's hard to like completely identify the character under one.
Like, the only thing I could say to kind of like a Dolly Parton kind of thing, where it's kind of like
a little bit, yeah,
sleazy and sexy, but also really cute and charming.
Yes.
Kind of vibe. Like, you can't help but like her, even though she's technically probably what you'd call white trash. Like, absolutely wonderful, brilliant nails and wigs. So yeah, Mitch tells him all this information. Eddie's like, this is kind of beyond my level of expertise, but you know, because your brother's with Ray, I'm gonna look into it for you, which immediately backfires, because as soon as he does any kind of probing, the hitmen are sent out. And there's like, it's a pretty fun scene where Eddie and Tammy are making out, and when they hear someone coming, she thinks it's his wife, so she hides under the desk, and it's actually these two hitmen who confront and immediately kill Eddie. And she's kind of under the table witnessing it all, and like an awful situation for her, but it was very entertaining to watch.
Yes.
Straight off the bat, we see that, this firm, like, we thought it was just like people who want to leave the firm, you know, might get themselves killed, but it's like, you do anything to mess with the firm and you probably end up dead, which is really full on, like, for they describe as not that big a law firm. Like, it's,
40 folks.
Yeah, there's like 40 lawyers, which to me seems like a very big law firm, but apparently is not. Oh yeah, so Mitch goes to like a seminar thing in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it's, because the monument's there.
Right.
And he's immediately made to go talk to the FBI and the Department of Justice. The way they catch him is Ed Harris's character, Wayne, from the FBI, has put like the news clipping about Eddie's death in his little folder thing. And then when he turns around, he's just sitting there staring at him across the room. That's one way to get someone's attention. the Department of Justice is like, yeah, we're onto these guys. Either you help us or you're going to be brought down with them and you'll go to jail. So Mitch is like immediately in this really fucked kind of position where, he wants to help, because what they're doing is wrong. I guess what they tell him is that 70% of their clients are all mob, everything else, yeah, illegitimate
right.
businesses, and only 30% is legitimate.
They're basically like a boutique, law firm that mostly services the mob in Chicago.
That, yeah, if Mitch doesn't help, he's going to go jail along with the rest of them. So it's in his best interest to help, even though he'll get disbarred and never be able to practice law again, and he'll be actually breaking the law himself by breaking client attorney privilege. So he's in the worst possible position. He's also sort of told, like, these guys kill anyone who tries to leave. Like, why do you think there have been 4 deaths in the last 10 years? These fairly young people. Yeah, he's like, they tap everything. Like, they tap your home phones, your phones at home. They were in the office. Like, they're watching your every move. So either you do this or one of us is going to get you. So yeah, I feel really bad for Mitch. Like, he just thought he was getting a nice little job in Memphis with lots of money. And yeah.
Oh yeah, he's
now his
bummed.
Life is ruined.
It would have been funny if the 2 previous lawyers that got killed also died in a boat explosion. Like, if the law firm, like, that's their whole thing. they just kill people with boat explosions.
Like, we can't get them onto a boat, but they somehow, like, yeah. some sort of land boat explosion.
Yeah. It was a canoe in the middle of a golf course.
Mitch, you know, has all this new information. His tactic is, though, which is very brave, he actually goes straight to all the big guys in the firm and admits to them that the FBI has come to see him. But he does a very abridged, like, vague kind of telling of what they was actually said. And I guess it's just to gauge what their reaction's going to be. And they kind of play it off a little bit like, they're just always after us. Just, you know, do the right thing and you'll be fine. He goes home and has to tell Abby what has gone on. And Abby's obviously distraught, like, she runs from the house. And this is the first time we see a Tom Cruise run. And
yep.
It's like the quintessential Tom Cruise run. He sprints from the house, like, so fast. I don't, like, she had to have like a 5-minute head start for him to yeah. be able to run that far and fast. Yeah, and he kind of tells her, like, we have to just pretend like nothing's going on because we might get killed if we act up or try to leave.
Right.
Which is, yeah, a fucked thing to put your wife into, but what can you do, hey? All her red flags that she was seeing were right. Poor Abby. So what Mitch decides to do, he's like, all right, I guess I'm going to do what they want. I don't have a choice. So I'm just going to start copying files and go from there. Except when he tries to copy files, he can't because, as I said earlier, they charge clients for everything. So he needs to actually put the client code in before he can even photocopy so that they can charge the client for that 10 seconds it took to photocopy something. So he's, yeah, immediately hits a hurdle, but he gets some help when Tammy rocks up to the office to tell him what actually happened with Eddie being murdered. She's like, well, I'm in danger and you probably are too. What can I do to help? And he's like, actually, I have a really good idea. Basically, they are going to work together to try and bring this firm down by stealing the files that he needs, getting her to photocopy them, and then he'll take them back since he can't do it at work. Pretty convoluted, but it seems to work.
Yeah. This is about where it starts. Yeah, this is about where it starts getting really convoluted.
Yeah, so much starts to happen. And yeah, like I said, I had to, as I was writing notes, it was when I was, I'm like, oh, that's what that meant. Oh, shit. Yeah, it's not just running for the second half of the movie like I thought it was. So yeah, they've worked out a way that they're going to do this in a way that won't get them immediately noticed by the firm. On the way back after this scheming, this master plan, Mitch is stopped by William, security guard, to have a chat. And as they're talking, the creepy blonde man with the blue eyes gets out of the car. And that's when, I guess, the final piece, he's like, oh, okay, this is definitely proof that it's the firm who've been killing all these people because, you know, this hitman is here right now. They take him to a private location, like in a car park in the woods or something, and basically tell him, like, you know, the FBI might do something awful, like find out that you had an affair, and maybe they have photos like we do of you having the affair. And if you're good, you don't have to worry about it. And also, here are the photos of you having an affair.
Totally, like,
real it's
the old like nice pictures of getting laid on the beach you got here. It'd be a real shame if your wife found out. By the FBI, yes. Not by us. We're not going to do it. Of course, we would never. But
if someone was to accidentally give these photos to the FBI,
right.
Or who knows what would happen? Yeah, so lots of, like, really not even subtle threats, just a lot of threats that Mitch has to then deal with. But then they, like, do this really fucked thing where, you know, they take him back to the office and he goes in, he's like all sweaty and stressed, and he's told, you need to come into the boardroom right now. It's really important. He goes in there and it's everyone from the firm is in there, all the men from the firm anyway. And they're all like looking at him. They're like, you think you're so smart, but someone's smarter. And he's, you know, sweating bullets. And they're like, you passed the bar exam and you came second. And like his wife's there. So like after this horrible, like all these threats of in blackmail and everything, they're like, and also here's a surprise party. You did really well and you're, totally. You're a lawyer now. Awful. Okay. So this is feels like a bit of a weird spot to stop, but there's still, I just looked at my notes and there's still so much more that happens in this movie. I'm sorry, I've just been like a wall of text from my mouth as trying to explain what happens in this movie.
Gonna really heat up here in the next part.
Tom Cruise runs a lot, I promise. Okay, so we're going to pause here. So do you want to plug anything? I mean, you've told us about the King cast. Where can we find you, like, online?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Scott Wampler, BMD, and at the King cast at King cast. Fuck, I should know this off the top of my head, shouldn't I?
Hang on, I think it's on my computer right now. Hang on.
I think it's KingCast 19, but it could be the
KingCast 9. Yep, KingCast 19.
Okay, yes. Please stop by and check the show out if you are even remotely a horror fan.
Yeah, it's a really good time. I haven't read a lot of Stephen King. I've read a bunch, but I've watched a lot of Stephen King movies, and yeah, it's a really good time.
Well, thank you for saying so.
You're welcome. Yeah, for me, if you want to look me up, it's Tom Cruise Reviews on Instagram, Tom Cruise Reviews. Review, no S on the end, on Twitter, or just check out the website tomcruisereviews.com. We will continue with the rest of The Firm next week. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Adios, folks.